Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent.
Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm Tawny Alvarez, your host from Verrill, and today our guest is Paul Corrales, VP of Client and Human Resources Services at MP, a company that combines cutting-edge, user-friendly HR software with proactive customer support and human resources services to make sure that clients are always apprised of the latest in HR updates. I've asked Paul to be on the show today to discuss the employee retention tax credit, an issue and a question that he's been getting a lot of time with clients talking about. And if you are anything like me, and as soon as someone says taxes or numbers, their eyes glaze over, I need you to grab a cup of coffee right now because Paul has some really important stuff to share with us. See, Paul, this is the reason why I've waited so long to talk about this topic is because it's numbers and I just can't wrap my hands around it.
Yeah, no, as an HR professional myself, I tend to run when I hear numbers too, but this one, these numbers were too good to pass up, so we decided to dive in head first instead.
Well, good. I think that is a good way to look at it. So thank you, Paul, so much for being on this show today, and welcome. You and I have had a lot of conversations in the past, and you've been on the show before, but for those of you who are new listeners who haven't heard from Paul in the past, can you share with the listeners a little bit about your professional history and the work that you're doing now?
Sure. Yeah, you bet. Got a little over a dozen years experience in the HR advisement industry. Been at MP for 8 years now. So really working with businesses of all shapes and sizes and industries from a strategic HR perspective, helping with compliance and people strategy and just kind of organizational development and all of that. So it's been really great working with so many businesses over the years. And this is just a new program that has allowed us to introduce a new conversation with many of these clients and provide them many times some much needed funding or capital to help them continue on or start new programs.
I think that's a really good point here is that we are at a time where employers are struggling still. We're recording this in January of 2022. We're still, at some points, I would say in the middle of the pandemic. At this point in time, I simply say there is a pandemic going on because I am in no position to determine whether or not we're at the beginning, middle, or end of it. But it's ongoing and a lot of organizations are still needing funds. So provide our listeners with just a little bit of background about what MP does and the services it provides so that they can understand the work that you do in connection with kind of MP more generally.
Sure, definitely. So we've got a wide range of business services at MP. We're a full service human capital management company where businesses can utilize our software for payroll, HRIS. We also have recruitment process outsourcing. So especially in this day and age, we've been able to help many businesses find talent. And then over and kind of on my side of the house, the HR services, we have a team of certified HR professionals that works directly with businesses to kind of coincide with all the HCM and the software piece and the technology, providing that kind of human element to kind of complete the HR puzzle for businesses.
I like that, complete the HR puzzle, because I know that as everything continues to evolve, new laws are passed and changes to old laws, it's tough to keep on top of everything that's going on. And I'll be honest, the ERC, this employee retention tax credit, is something I have not stayed on top of. So Paul, what is the Employee Retention Tax Credit, which I believe is referenced with the acronym ERC, because we know as HR leaders that we only use acronyms, ADA, EEOC. I mean, if we can make it an acronym, we're going to. So tell me about the ERC.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. You can kind of interchangeably use ERC or ERTC. It is a program that's actually been around since the start of stimulus and really early on in the pandemic. It just wasn't a viable option at first. So it was introduced in the first stimulus bill that passed. But the reason why we're only just now talking about it over the last several months is that in the original stimulus bill, there was a rule that there was the PPP program established for the Paycheck Protection Program and those loans, and then the ERC. At that time, they kind of put a fork in the road where they said businesses either have to do a PPP loan or an ERC tax credit. You couldn't combine both. So the vast majority of businesses went with the PPP loans. That was the advisable strategy at that point in time. And so no one really talked about ERC. It just kind of was in hibernation. Fast forward to the end of 2020 and the second stimulus bill passing very late December 2020, within that bill, the rules changed. So they changed the tune. They introduced ERC for a couple quarters in 2021, and also, more importantly, changed the rules so that businesses who had received a PPP loan could now also participate in the Employee Retention Tax Credit program, just provided that the wages don't overlap for any time period. So this you know, was a dramatic change, and this now allowed businesses to take advantage of both programs.
Well, thank you for that. Honestly, easy to understand description of the program, because I think so often when we start talking about tax issues, the language that is used is not easy to digest and understand, and it definitely leaves my head spinning. For our guests who are just joining us, you're listening to the HR Power Hour radio show. I'm your host, Tani Alvarez, and today our guest is Paul Karelis, VP of Client and Human Resources Services at MP, a company that combines cutting-edge, user-friendly HR software with proactive customer support and human resources to make sure that clients are always apprised of the latest in HR updates. Today, we're talking about ERTCs, the Employee Retention Tax Credit. And Paul just did a great job of very concisely describing what the ERC is. But Paul, what employers qualify for the ERC? Is it only if you have under 5 employees, or is this a broader program?
Yeah, it's a great question. This might be where the complexity kind of starts. So at the high level, the ERC is a refundable tax credit against employer Social Security tax. So it is refundable, meaning that oftentimes the amount of the credit exceeds what the actual tax liability was for that time period that it's being claimed. And businesses will then receive a check for the entire amount, even if it exceeds their tax liabilities. It's based on wages paid to employees. And the complexity really starts because the programs are different if you're claiming for 2020 and if you're claiming for 2021. So in the 2020 program, employers can claim up to a 50% credit on up to $10,000 in employees' wages. So essentially it's up to $5,000 per employee for the 2020 program that they can claim. For the 2021 program, it's really a separate program each quarter. So while the American Rescue Plan extended ERTC through all 4 quarters of this year, the infrastructure bill that recently passed did eliminate 4th quarter. So, but there are still 3 quarters in play. And the 2021 program is a tax credit of 70% of wages up to $10,000. So it can be up to $7,000 per employee per quarter. So while the 2020 program kind of maxes out at a $5,000 per employee credit, it can be up to $21,000 per employee in 2021. In terms of restrictions for businesses based on on size and things like that. Again, there are differences, whether you're talking about 2020 versus 2021. The definition is always based on full-time employees in 2019. So businesses need to look at their full-time employee count, which is defined as employees who worked 30 hours or more per week. It's different from things like the Affordable Care Act. You don't have to count full-time equivalents. So two 15-hour employees don't equal one FTE. You're strictly looking at the actual full-time employee count in 2019. For 2020, you can take full advantage of the program if that number is under 100. But for the 2021 program, businesses all the way up to 500 full-time employees in 2019 can take full advantage. So that's what the cutoffs are for what's considered small employer versus large employer in the ERC program. If you are over those thresholds, there still is the possibility to get some credits, but instead of being a credit on wages, all wages, it would be limited to monies paid or wages paid to employees who weren't performing work. So this will sometimes come up if we're working, say, with a business that had 300 full-time employees, let's say, in 2019. They can take full advantage of the 2021 program as long as they're otherwise eligible, which we'll talk about. But they are considered large for 2020. But if, like many businesses, they had a furlough going on, those employees may be eligible for a credit, either in the form of if there was any kind of compensation paid to those workers while they were on furlough, or what's more common is employer-paid portions of health insurance can count as wages under this program. So if you had employees on furlough and you were continuing their health insurance coverage, the value of that could be considered eligible for ERTC.
Perfect. So it sounds like there is a lot of ways in which a company could become eligible for these wages. I mean, is it only in certain industries? Is this only in healthcare or organizations that stayed open and were operating through the pandemic? Or is it broader from an industry standpoint?
So there are two avenues of qualification and can conceivably apply to any industry. So the two methods of qualification are either the gross receipts method or the suspension of operations method. Gross receipts, similar to what we were just talking about, has kind of two different measures, whether you're talking about 2020 or 2021. Again, you're comparing against 2019 like you do for employee size. That's kind of your measuring stick. For the 2020 program to be eligible under the gross receipts method, you'd have to show a 50% or greater decline when you're comparing the same quarter in 2020 against 2019. Similar to employee size, the 2021 program is more lenient. To qualify under the gross receipts method for 2021 ERC, you just need to show a 20% or greater decline in a quarter when compared against that same quarter in 2019. The other and more gray, I'd say, avenue for eligibility under ERC, so let's say you didn't meet that gross receipts decline, maybe your revenues were stagnant, maybe even you did better business than you did in pre-pandemic times, you can still qualify under what's called the suspension of operations. So what that means is that there was a COVID-19 related regulation, restriction, something in place that restricted more than a nominal portion of your business. So the golden example of that is the restaurant industry. So because restrictions were in place that either prevented or severely limited the ability to dine in, that they could either have zero dine-in service or 25% or 50% or even 75%, that's considered more than a nominal part of their business. So in that circumstance, all wages would qualify in those quarters that the restrictions were in place, or at least until the restrictions were lifted. This can apply to other businesses as well. So, businesses that couldn't have on-site services and the list goes on and on. So these can really vary on a case-by-case basis, but if the gross receipts test doesn't apply, then we look to the suspension of operations as a possibility.
And as to the suspension of operations question, are we looking at whether or not it's local, state, federal, if any of those had restrictions on them, or can we rely on that, or is it only if there was a federal restriction on their operations?
So it would be any. It can go all the way down to city or local level. So whether it's federal, state, or city, those all qualify. Obviously, the dates of eligibility can vary depending on what state you're in. So, you know, a restaurant in say Massachusetts, their restrictions were largely lifted May 29th. If you hop over the border to New Hampshire, the restrictions there were generally lifted May 8th. So, the eligibility, if you don't qualify based on gross receipts, does end at the date the restrictions ended. But yeah, you can use state or local restrictions to qualify.
Perfect. Thank you for that. And with that, it's a good time for us to take a quick break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employee relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
Let me ask you a question. How do you feel about genetically modified ingredients?
Don't like them.
Artificial flavors and colors?
No thanks.
Clean ingredients.
Now that I like.
When you care about what's in things and what's not, shouldn't your vitamins be clean too? Sundown Vitamins are all clean all the time. Non-GMO, free of gluten and dairy, with colors and flavors from real food. We even have USDA certified Sundown Organics and kids vitamins too. When you're living clean, choose clean with Sundown Vitamins at supermarkets, drugstores, or on Amazon.
If a natural disaster comes knocking, how prepared is your family? You can't just close the door on earthquakes, floods, or hurricanes and hope they go away. That's why it's important to make a plan now. Ready.gov/plan has the tools and tips you need to prepare your family for an emergency. So if disaster shows up at your doorstep, you'll be ready. Visit ready.gov/plan and make a plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
At over 150 years old, Verrill has an illustrious history with more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill as one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact Verrill at verrill-law.com. That's verrill-law.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-law.com. I'm your host, Tani Alvarez, and today our guest is Paul Corrales, VP of Client and Human Resources Services at MP, a company that combines cutting-edge, user-friendly HR software with proactive customer support and human resources services to make sure that clients are always apprised of the latest in HR updates. Today, we're talking about ERCs or ERTCs. And for those of you who are not up to date on that acronym, we're talking about the Employee Retention Tax Credit. And you've likely heard a lot about that over the last few years. But if you learned about it in early 2020, right at the beginning of the pandemic, and you also got a PPP loan, you probably put it out of your mind. But Paul has already shared some really great news with listeners about eligibility. So about who's eligible, about the industries, about the size. We've talked about the gross receipts. Even in talking, I mean, we haven't talked about numbers yet, Paul, really. We've talked about some percentages. So the good news is that you have not lost me yet. But you might have lost, you might have lost some of our other HR leaders who maybe focus only on HR and they have a payroll company like MP that's assisting with things, or their finance department. is assisting with all things tax related. But why is this topic one that HR managers should be aware of?
Sure. So, I mean, I think as HR professionals, we're always, you know, looking to show value and have a seat at the strategic table. And I think while the financial side of the house always would be the best to go to in terms of conversations about gross receipts and revenues and tax filings and all of that, oftentimes HR really has a good handle on how the restrictions impacted a business. So they're working closely with the employees and seeing the struggles of managers and supervisors when a COVID-related restriction or regulation has really hampered their ability to conduct their business in a similar way that had been before. So there is a lot of nuance with this, especially around the area of telecommuting, because so many businesses changed their model in terms of where people were performing the work. And the IRS has weighed on this a little bit in their guidance. There's been a ton of guidance released as the program really gained some steam over the last 12 months or so. And one of the real gray areas is, you know, if we were forced to have people working remotely, is that considered a suspension of operations? And, you know, unfortunately, the answer is it depends. So it's really doing an analysis of how substantially similar were you able to conduct your main business functions in a remote environment. If it was, you know, little to no interruption, then that might not qualify. But if there were certain programs or events or meetings or things that really weren't able to be replicated in a virtual work environment, then you could very well have an argument there for eligibility.
Paul, you get your JD since the last time we talked, because I feel like the it depends answer, that's the one I'm supposed to be given. I don't hear that one from you as much.
This program has brought out the best in me, I guess.
Yeah, clearly. You know, one of the things that I love about this conversation that we're having is I feel like so often in the past, organizations have siloed on HR. HR deals with, they deal with payroll, they deal with people issues, and otherwise kind of stay in your own lane without understanding the fact that we're operating in a time in which the aspects of HR play a role in all areas of how we move forward and the strategic direction in creating a more diverse work environment. And now from a finance perspective, making sure that we are taking advantage of this credit to the full extent possible and using kind of all the different skill sets of individuals to really talk about the best way that an argument can be made as to why an organization would be entitled to these funds. So definitely very, very interesting. Now, so we've talked kind of generally about why human resources should be aware of this program. We've talked about the ERC or the ERTC itself, but I'm still struggling with the how. How do people get this money? I mean, do we just not pay the government this money? We've called it a credit, but what's it a credit towards? Because I know that with the PPP, we had a lot of questions about this, about how do I get my money?
Right. Yeah. No, that's a great question. So in terms of real-time claims, which some businesses were able to take advantage of during 2021 and kind of claim the credits in real time and reduce their tax liability on an ongoing basis, the ship has kind of sailed there, where what we're doing is we're looking back on a time period. The first date of potential eligibility would be March 13th of 2020. That's kind of when the IRS established that the pandemic started for purposes of this program, through the end of third quarter, so through wages paid on September 30th of 2021. And so you kind of have to break it down quarter by quarter. The IRS does not let you add up all your eligible credits and put them on one amended tax return. What you essentially have to do is figure out which quarters are eligible. I think we'll talk about it in a little bit. You do have to navigate certain exclusions. So where we talked at the top, where you can do PPP and ERTC, you do have to not claim ERC on any wages that you use PPP funds to pay with. There are some other programs too that can be at play. But essentially, once you determine what your eligible time period are, and what your eligible wages are, you then go back to those quarters, and essentially what you have to do is amend the 941 or the federal payroll tax filings that you did in that quarter, in those quarters. So you're essentially filing what's called a 941X for each quarter that you're claiming the credit, sending those off to the IRS. While the regular 941 can be electronically filed, these 941Xs do have to be done old-fashioned on paper and mailed in the traditional way. And then it's just a matter of playing the waiting game with the IRS. So for as long as it takes them to process that amended return, which we're seeing is a decent amount of time, to say the least, they then will, once they process it, they're not doing direct deposit for this program either. They will send a physical check to the business reflecting the amount of the credit.
We've returned to snail mail and wet signatures. So, I mean, you've hinted at it, but in the work that you've done with clients, do you have any experience as to kind of how long the wait is, especially if it's a company that is on the brink right now, didn't know about this, and now wants to take advantage of a timeline at all?
Yeah, so the IRS is trying to make improvements. I mentioned that the rules all changed at the very end of 2020 with this program. So they caught the IRS off guard with it as well. Their software didn't have this capability really built in to process all of these at the time. They also only had one office, I think the Cincinnati office, trained to be taking all of these. So they had one office handling all of the 941Xs that pertain to the ERC. They have subsequently added some efficiencies. They have trained additional offices to process these, but we are looking at a time frame of anywhere from 4 to 7 months right now for the processing, and from the time you file it till you have a check in hand. Businesses that were able to take advantage last year and get it on the 941 itself, the original filing that they were doing for that quarter, saw a turnaround time of closer to 8 to 10 weeks. Unfortunately, these are taking longer, but the IRS is striving to get it within a 12-week turnaround time.
Okay. Well, I mean, so not super fast, but you're not waiting a year, but it is money coming back into the organization, which I don't think anyone is going to say is a bad thing. So that's definitely a plus, right?
Right.
For those of you who are just joining us, you're listening to the HR Power Hour radio show. I'm your host, Tani Alvarez from Verrill. And today our guest is Paul Corrales, VP of Client and Human Resources Services at MP, a company that combines cutting edge user-friendly HR software with proactive customer support and human resources services to make sure that clients are always apprised of the latest in HR updates. Today, we're talking about the employee retention tax credits, something that a lot of us have heard about over the past few years. With hope, we have some listeners who have already taken advantage of it. If not, we now have information about how individuals can take advantage of it moving forward. You know, Paul, I'd like to pivot a little bit. Let's say that you're an individual who has taken advantage of the ERTC, or now that you've listened to this episode, you're going to take advantage of it. It's a government program. I presume that an audit is possible. Is that a correct assumption?
Yeah. So in the American Rescue Plan that was passed, I believe in April of last year, in addition to expanding the program a bit, they did give themselves the ability to have a 5-year window to review and potentially audit ERC claims.
Okay, so we're looking at a 5-year audit after the credit is sought. What should employers do in order to be set up in the best possible way to respond to an audit if that were to occur?
So we definitely recommend having a substantiation document. So when we work with clients, once we come up with the final results and we're all in agreement, we do put together a substantiation document that either points to declining gross receipts or whatever other methodology they're using to claim eligibility. If it is something where they're claiming a restriction, we do recommend retaining a copy of that restriction, whether it be the press release from the applicable governor or just some record of what that restriction was that they're claiming eligibility based on.
And we're looking here at gross receipts itself. So if somebody is still working, let's say that the organization has the same amount of jobs that they did pre-pandemic during the course of a quarter, but they're finding that they're not getting paid on those jobs at the same rate, so that they have some quarters that are in fact lower, that could be sufficient in order to qualify. Is that correct?
Yeah, you'd want kind of a P&L, profit and loss statement, or you know, keep your financial records together. In terms of the gross receipts, it's more straightforward for the for-profit companies. It's important to note that this program is open to nonprofits as well. In terms of calculating their gross receipts, it's really considering all income that's come into the organization, including gifts and annuities and all that type of income that's all counted in the gross receipts calculation for purposes of this program.
Let's jump to, I mean, you've mentioned it a couple times, and specifically as it relates to some of the confusion in the beginning for organizations who chose to use PPP funds, who said, you know what, I'll use PPP funds. I understand that means I can't use ERC funds. But now we know that they can, in fact, have both. They can have the PPP funds and they can have the ERTC funds as long as it's not the same quarters. First, was my statement correct here? I am just making statements when you've only just taught me about this concept.
Yeah, mostly correct. The interaction with other stimulus programs is kind of where the nuance and the complexity really comes into play in terms of determining what your ultimate credit amount is. So you're completely correct that you can't have overlap in terms of wages that were paid with PPP or some other stimulus funds, most notably Restaurant Revitalization Fund or the Shuttered Venues Grants. For businesses that receive those are really the big three that you have to exclude and be mindful of. But within using PPP, as it's the most common example, you can really fine tune it. So just because you had PPP in a given quarter doesn't eliminate the eligibility for that entire quarter. It's really more finite and fine tuned to the actual payroll periods. And on top of that, too, with the PPP loan, a lot of times you would have covered periods of up to 24 weeks of time. So there is some strategy involved as well, especially with second round PPP loans. So many people, based on sound advice at the time, filed for forgiveness of their PPP loans and just wanted to get it in and not have to worry about it. So they just applied 100% of their loan towards payroll costs. So that does limit some of the ERC in that sense, where you do have to exclude whatever you claimed as payroll costs on your forgiveness application. One important thing to note is that by the rules, only 60% of your PPP loan has to be allocated to payroll costs. There are other expenses that you can apply it to, whether it be rent, utilities, and later on even inventory costs and product costs and things like that. So for a business that can reduce the amount of payroll costs that they use the PPP loan for, that opens up more time and more wages to be able to claim these credits on. So if businesses haven't yet filed for forgiveness for their PPP loans and think they may be eligible, they'll want to take a look at that and really strategize and potentially reduce the amount of payroll costs that they're claiming as part of their PPP forgiveness.
Ton of helpful information there, Paul. Thank you so much. We are at that point, though. We're going to take another quick break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
Hi, I'm Susan McVetty.
And I'm Pete McVetty from McVetty's Hearth and Home.
Is there a sale going on at the store right now?
No.
No Hearthstone, Quadrifier, Mendota, Wittes, Blaze King, or Morso sale?
No.
No Yodel, Vermont Castings, or Regency? Oh, there's always a Regency sale.
No.
You're telling me that out of the gazillions of wood, gas, and pellet stoves that we carry, there's not a single sale going on?
Nope.
Oh, what about patio furniture, awnings, grills, smokers, and aluminum docks?
No, just because there isn't a big sale going on doesn't mean that we're not having great deals and still doing free estimates for anyone needing a heating appliance.
Oh, well, good. Just let me know when we're having another sale.
Okay. There's always a bargain to be had if you are looking for one, and we don't need a new heating appliance.
Well, maybe my sister needs one, or my friend, or your sister.
Stop by McVetty's Hearth and Home at 893 Route 1 in Yarmouth, or check out our website at stovesofmaine.com for the latest information, including our sales.
Really? I have to check out the website? Really? And I can't believe Regency isn't having a sale.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
And you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, Tawny Alvarez, and today our guest is Paul Corrales, VP of Client and Human Resources Services at MP, a company that combines cutting-edge, user-friendly HR software with proactive customer support and human resources services to make sure that clients are always apprised of the latest in HR updates. Today, we're talking about employee retention tax credits, sometimes known as ERCs, sometimes known as ERTCs. You likely heard a lot about them in early 2000 when the pandemic first hit, and then it may have fallen off your radar based off of either a correct or mistaken belief that you didn't qualify. But I found the last half hour of our discussions, Paul, to just be very enlightening because there were some misconceptions that I had that you have definitely helped me to understand better. Sometimes, however, the problem with a show like this, where there is so much really good information, is that listeners are overwhelmed. So I want to help to make this easier for people. Takeaways. If you were to give HR professionals who are listening to this episode three takeaways that, you know, the tomorrow morning, Monday morning, whenever they're in the office next, that they can put into place in their organization, what would those three things be?
It would be, you know, really just with an analytical mind, take a look and say, you know, between March of 2020 and through September of 2021, what impact did government restrictions and COVID-related regulations have on our business? Was it something that impacted us in more than a nominal way? And the IRS has defined nominal as more than 10%. So either, you know, more than 10% of the business's revenues or more than 10% of the total hours worked of the organization. So, you know, were there restrictions in place that impacted our business? If so, we should look into this. You want to have a handle on any government stimulus programs that the business did receive, whether those be PPP loans, restaurant revitalization grants, other stimulus related funding, just to understand how those could impact. And then one thing that we discuss a lot with businesses is just kind of the ownership structure. So there are rules, you know, when a business owns multiple entities that do need to be considered. They can help and they can hurt. So when a business is part of a control group, you do have to aggregate the employee count and the revenues. But at the same time, and something that's helped a lot of businesses is that in a group, when one of the entities was subject to a restriction because of those aggregation rules, The entire organization can be deemed eligible many times due to the restrictions in place for one of the entities or the location. Sometimes if a business is in multiple states, the restrictions in one state can often carry over eligibility to the business in other states as well.
When we're talking about the restrictions themselves, if the requirement that there be work from home for individuals, and as a result, maybe the organization previously only had desktops or they didn't have any mobility kind of operations, would the cost associated with that be something that, that would go into potentially kind of increased costs and that government regulation type language?
Potentially, yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, they're really looking for business impact and what the restrictions did not allow the business to do, or you know, had prevented them from having a substantially similar operations.
You've given HR professionals a lot of things that they themselves can think about and do after listening to this episode, but you also, you work for an organization, you work for MP. I mean, is this something that for an organization that's already stretched thin, that has a team that's already overworked, can MP assist in this in any way? Or what services do you offer in this regard?
Yep, no. MP does have an employee retention tax credit service that we offer to businesses, whether they work with us for payroll purposes or not. So we do work with folks who use other platforms as well. We're able to take their reports and manipulate the data and calculate the credit. So yeah, we start off with a consultation. We work with businesses to confirm their eligibility, either by gross receipts or restrictions, depending on the circumstances. We then determine which quarters would be eligible. We work with the business, again, especially if they're not within our payroll platform, to gather up all of the necessary wage data, all the necessary data, including any exclusions that we need to consider. And then our team of tax credit specialists will do the calculations, come up with some results, again, create that substantiation document that they're going to want to keep on file. And then depending on their relationship with us, either create or file the 941X amended returns.
So I think that probably at the top of my mind right now is this thought that as an HR professional, I'm going to go to my finance team and I'm going to tell my finance team, hey, I heard this great radio show, this great podcast, and they were talking all about the employee retention tax credit. Are we taking advantage of that? And finance is going to say to me something to the effect of the CPAs didn't bring it up, so we must not qualify. If an organization's CPA hasn't talked to them about it, should they presume that they don't qualify?
I'd say no. We have run into that before. And you know, my heart goes out to the CPA community because similar to the IRS, where this law or the more significant change to the law occurred, I think it was December 27th, 2020. CPAs were just gearing up for the busy time of year. They had a ton on their plates. They weren't prepared for such monumental news. And a lot of these nuanced changes that really created eligibility for thousands and thousands of businesses kind of went by the wayside and was still a little bit ignored. So there within the CPA community, there is, you know, understandably, sometimes they're not aware of all the potential avenues for eligibility or that all these changes really occur just because of the timing of it all and how it all kind of shook out.
That makes a ton of sense. And you know, I think that we all have so much data coming at us every single day, whether it's from news media, whether or not it's internally with our organization, whether it's client needs, that we're just being bombarded with this information. And even more difficult when there's an evolution of the information. We see it, you know, we see it with CDC guidance on a daily basis, with the understanding that science evolves and changes, so it makes sense. And at the same time, I think that both federal and state kind of taxing and financial application has evolved and changed as well, especially when I think there's hope, dreams, and desires that the pandemic will be behind us soon, but also that unknown with the hope that our economy will, you know, still prosper kind of throughout.
Yeah, I mean, Google can be a great tool and the internet can be a great resource, but, you know, when it comes to something that's just changed and evolved so much over the last 12 to 18 months, depending on what link you click on, you could have up-to-date news or you could have, we spoke with a client a few weeks ago who we had a great conversation with, and then he shot us an email and said, oh, I just did a Google search about this, and it says if I have PPP, I'm not eligible for this. Is that true? So much like any type of HR research or tax research, and there's a lot out there that could potentially be outdated or not correct. So just something to be mindful of with a program like this.
Yeah, no, absolutely, Paul. And we're at that point again. We're going to take another quick break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
Being a father is an honor, a challenge, a duty, a celebration, and a testimony. I want to be legendary for you because I found everything to live for.
That's dedication. Visit fatherhood.gov to hear more. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
In a recent survey, investors shared what they felt were the greatest threats to their retirement. It's no surprise the most common threats include stock market volatility, economic uncertainty, conflict in the Middle East, the 2020 presidential impeachment and election. Unfortunately, there are many threats beyond your control that can affect your retirement savings. At Goldco, a leader in precious metals, the team believes one way to protect your investment portfolio is with physical gold and silver. Goldco will send you a free 1 ounce silver American Eagle coin, and all you have to do is pay for shipping and handling. No obligation, 100% free. Call 855-971-2006 to get your free silver American Eagle coin.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
And we're back. You're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, Tawny Alvarez from Verrill. And today our guest is Paul Corrales, VP of Client and Human Resources Services at MP, a company that combines cutting-edge, user-friendly HR software with proactive customer support and human resources services to make sure that clients are always apprised of the latest in HR updates. We've spent the last hour talking about the employee retention tax credits, and I think Paul has done an amazing job of giving us really easy to understand facts and kind of circumstances surrounding when an entity may be eligible for use of the ERC and things that they should keep at top of mind when they're talking to tax professionals or consultants about this issue. You know, Paul, I'm going to bring us back to the point in our conversation where you talked about the gray area, where I accused you of getting a JD in the last few years since we have spoken. We know that when you described eligibility, you talked about the fact that gross receipts could play a role, but that there was also the suspension of operations kind of gray area and what that could look like. Could you provide some common examples of things that you've seen when working with clients about what that could include?
Yeah, so yeah, in terms of kind of spanning across some industries, some of the ones that we've been able to utilize, especially for businesses that weren't as severely impacted on the gross receipts front, we've worked with a lot of breweries. So, you know, their business may have been sustained by selling, you know, canned beer and things like that, but if they were operating a tap room and the restrictions on being able to have people sit at the bar and consume beverages in that setting would generally qualify. You know, skipping over to something like the medical field when there was a restriction on elective surgeries and procedures, that's another qualifier there for that time period. Some others would include like the fitness industry and restrictions on the size or ability to be able to hold group fitness classes. That's another example. And even in the retail world, for the time period where, you know, businesses weren't allowed to have people inside the stores and were forced to do things like curbside pickup and things like that, those are other potential avenues for eligibility. One of the really more nuanced ways where some businesses have been able to qualify, even if they themselves as a business did not have restrictions on their operations, is if a supplier of gross goods, suppliers that they worked with, if there were restrictions in place for the supplier. So it can't simply be that the supplier was struggling to find people to do the work and that was causing the delays in the delivery of product. It would have to be that the supplier had a COVID-related restriction in place that restricted them or limited them. But in that case, businesses are allowed to lean on that to claim eligibility for these credits. So again, when we talk about kind of audit defense, you do want to work with that supplier and make sure you know specifically what the restriction was that was affecting their ability to fulfill their orders to you. But should you have good record of that and be able to keep that on reference, that is another potential way for businesses who weren't restricted at all themselves to be able to claim these credits as well.
And when we're talking about maintenance of data and information to support an audit, would that simply be an email from the supplier explaining what the delay was, or is there an obligation that the organization dig deeper to determine the legitimacy of that? Because we know that we sometimes do business with suppliers who will tell us what we want to hear as opposed to the truth. What's the obligation for digging into those reasons?
Based on the IRS guidance that's been released to date, and what we've recommended as a best practice when a client has leveraged that as their avenue for eligibility, is we've asked for them to gather a statement from that supplier and then to also kind of do a little bit of homework on their own and again just get their hands on the declaration of that restriction, whether it be again a press release or a statement from a government official that put that regulation in place, that they couple that with the statement from the supplier themselves. And that's generally the best practice as of right now.
Paul, thank you so much for spending the last hour with me. I always love episodes where I walk away with more knowledge than I entered the room with, and you have definitely succeeded in educating me, and I hope that a lot of our listeners feel the same way. So thank you. Thank you again for joining us.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed it.
You've been listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at hrpowerhour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.